Good morning, Tony.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Enjoying these lovely clear nights that we're having.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that there are some good nights because we've had so much rain and so much cloud in the sky sort of not so very long ago that you tend to forget that it's pretty good. Just before we get underway with all this, I was in Suffolk a couple of weeks ago and it was staying in a place that was pretty much in the middle of a field. And, well, where I was, no outside light at all, so you could sit out there. And it only became apparent, after you'd sat out there for 20 minutes or so, of how much other light there was on the peripheries of it all. And you think, I could see so much more if they turn all those lights off.
Oh, absolutely. A man after my heart.
Yeah, we would say it was an interesting one, that you could see more stars, but it was nowhere near dark. When you think that, you know, when you initially turn your lights off in where you're staying, you think, oh, that's dark, can't see a thing. But give it 20 minutes and you can see the world and his dog walking along, further down. But this was in the middle of a field, and say, and all around the edges, light shining up. And this was in Suffolk.
So that must be from the towns that are around Suffolk, surely.
I would guess so, yeah. But they're not big towns. But, yeah, there's enough light there to make looking up at the night sky, how should we say, interesting. And it's the one place where you really would have thought you would have got dark nights, which, of course, is what you need, really, to appreciate just what is up there.
Exactly, Tony, I know. I mean, you do hear of people longing for dark skies, especially in our tiny island, and our island is tiny and it feels like it's getting a lot smaller too, doesn't it? But I remember where I live being a teenager and stepping outside, and I could see so many more stars when I was a teenager, and now it's just not the case. You see less stars because there's so much light pollution from surrounding towns, from surrounding roads, you know, all this sort of wasted power, really, where lights are misdirected, firing upwards into the sky. I mean, what a waste. What are they doing?
It was just one of those things that struck me, because at first I thought, oh, it's the perfect place to actually sit outside on a comfy chair and look up, and it'll be dark. I mean, really dark.
But you would think
so.
You
sat down, you looked up, and it's dark. And sort of 15 minutes later, oh, it's not that dark, is it?
No, because as well, obviously, your eyes take about 20 to 30 minutes to adjust, Tony. You know, we all do. So after about 20 to 30 minutes, you know, your irises, your pupil will widen, and you're able to see a lot more. It's what we call dark adaptation. But then, shockingly, as you say, you're seeing a lot more light as well, aren't you? Which is quite depressing, really.
Yeah, well, you ended up not seeing quite what you should see. And that was the disappointment of it, that we didn't see quite what we wanted to see, because I have been in darker places before and seen a lot more than just the obvious stars. You could see all literally the whole sky twinkled with stars before, but this wasn't.
Beautiful.
This was very limited and quite disappointing, really.
I know, and I'm often asked, Tony, when I give the talks, you know, where's the best place to go to see a really dark sky? And in all honesty, you need to go to somewhere in the middle of nowhere, like a vast desert.
Yeah.
Or, you know, out in sort of somewhere like the Serengeti in Africa.
Yeah.
Or best still really is, you know, the vast deserts in South America. So Chile, around that way, where, of course, they have these amazing telescopes, because not only do they have, you know, the clear skies, it's nice and dry there too, so they have what we call really good seeing. But that, you know, that's a luxury that most of us possibly won't experience in our lifetimes. But now that is what you would call a really dark sky. The rest of it really isn't, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's one of those things, but it is a shame, but there are still things that we can see in the sky. And, of course, autumn is on its way. Things like Andromeda, Perseus and Auriga are things that we're going to see in the sky. But this week is particularly important from tomorrow onwards towards the equinox, which is on Sunday. I think we're talking things like a lunar eclipse, aren't we?
We are. Now, your listeners may get excited. It's nice to get excited. It's lovely looking at the moon. But this is going to be a small partial lunar eclipse. So the whole of the moon isn't going to go dark or a dark orange colour. What's going to happen is on the northeast limb, I think it's something like 8% of it is going to go dark. Mm-hmm. But the whole of the moon will noticeably start to get darker, because this is when the whole of the moon's surface is going to be covered by the Earth's shadow. But there's only a small part of it, what we call the umbral shadow, like the central part of the shadow, which is created by Earth, Earth passing in front of the sun. That covers the whole moon. So the moon will start to go a little bit darker, but not noticeably so. It's only really as Earth slips more and more and more in front of the moon, you'll see a darker, darker, darker shadow on it. And in particular, it'll get clipped on the northeastern corner. So I'm sure your listeners probably need to know what time all this is going to
take place. Well, I was going to ask that question, actually.
Yeah, the whole of the eclipse itself. So when the outer shadow of Earth and the inner shadow of Earth starts passing over the moon, well, the moon starts passing behind the Earth's shadow, it's the whole duration of the event is 4 hours and 6 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
But the partial eclipse, so when you can see the clip of the northeast corner where the top right-hand side of the moon is going to go dark, will last about 1 hour and 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm. So what sort of time of day are we looking at?
Yeah. So the moon's going to move into the outer portion of the penumbral shadow, so the outer shadow, at precisely 1:41 in the morning. So that's Wednesday morning, tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
1:41. But as I say, very little will be seen either visually or photographically indeed. It's really only when the moon moves significantly into the penumbral shadow and closer to the darkest part of the shadow, what we call the umbral shadow, that you'll see the shading is really, really noticeable. Mm. And that's that will start at, I think it's exactly 12 minutes past three in the morning, tomorrow morning. So I don't know if anybody's going to be up at that time. You're going to need to.
Yeah.
I think and the point of what we call... Go on. The point of the greatest eclipse, so the darkest coverage when you can see that full partial eclipse, is at 3:44 in the morning.
Oh, yeah. That's... that's some very strong coffee, I think, isn't it, really, to see that
one? Yes.
Apart from all of that, tomorrow's actually quite a busy day in astronomical terms, isn't it? Because also, when you're talking about a partial lunar eclipse, it's a supermoon, the harvest moon. Mm-hmm. And, well,
yes,
just so much in there, isn't there?
Yes, there is. It's the second of four consecutive supermoons this year. So that makes our moon look a lot bigger and a lot brighter. And that's because the moon's monthly orbit around Earth is sort of slightly elliptical.
Mm-hmm.
So when the moon reaches its closest point to Earth each month, it's known as perigee. That happens, and it happens during a full moon. It looks much larger in the sky. So that's also happening at the same time. And it's a harvest moon as well, because it rises close to sunset for a few evenings in a row. Mm. And historically, that's always given farmers a little bit of extra moonlight to help them bring in the harvest, hence why it's called the harvest moon. So it's all happening at once, isn't it?
Makes a lot of sense, that does, actually, when you say it like that. I mean, and this is the traditional stuff of astronomy and why things are the way they are, certain things happen, and looking into it all, there are reasons for all these sorts of things. Leads me on to, if you're a 21st century person, summer ended on at the end of August, and the meteorological autumn started on September the 1st. If you're a little more traditional than that, we're still in summer, until, well, Sunday, really, aren't we?
We are, until precisely 1:43 in the afternoon on Sunday.
Follow these exact times, you're like a train timetable.
And that's what we call the autumn equinox.
Yeah, yeah. There's this disconnect between the scientific or the meteorological and the astronomical. I never realised there was that much difference between the two, but in seriousness, there is quite a difference, isn't there?
Yes, and then for us in astronomy, it really signifies the two moments in a year when the sun is exactly above the equator, which gives us an equal day, a night and day of equal length.
Mm.
More precisely, it's either of the two points in the sky where the ecliptic, so that's where the sun's its annual pathway, which of course it's not that at all, because it's the sun is stationary in the centre of the solar system, and of course the planets are going around it, but to us it always looks like the sun is moving, doesn't it? But it's either of the equinoxes, and there are two. So you've got the autumn and the spring equinox, and these two points signify where the ecliptic and the celestial equator intersect, and the celestial equator is Earth's equator projected onto the sky. So for us, put more simply, in the northern hemisphere, it's the time when the sun appears to cross the celestial equator heading south. And anyone who's up in the mornings can see that the sun is getting lower and lower. It's moved back towards the equator. It's heading now downwards. It's getting a lot lower. And of course, it's sinking down below the celestial equator, our equator. So, we're heading into winter.
It's a shocking thing. It happens so quickly. You know, it seemed like 5 minutes ago we were talking about the spring equinox and turning into summer and the summer solstice, which was 3 months ago now, I suppose. And been an interesting time. And, of course, we've had a rather wet summer. All sorts of things going on that I'm never sure whether they're attributed to astronomy and the positions of the sun and the moon, or whether everything we're told about things like climate change and all that are actually, well, more sort of controlled by man.
Well, you know, who knows, Tony? I mean, I don't know, and I'm not really in a position to answer that thoroughly because I don't feel like I know enough about it. But I certainly, as someone who lives in the countryside, for the last few years, that climate change is most definitely happening. And it feels to me like the seasons are shifting. Everything is a good deal earlier, much earlier in the year. We've always had a dew in the grass. I think this year there's really only been 1 week where there hasn't been any dew on the grass in the mornings. And dew is something you associate with autumn. The sunlight to me has looked like the sun that you normally experience in September. So the light itself resembles the light that you expect to see in September, but that was happening in August. The nights have been very, very chilly, and nature itself, you know, the flora and the fauna, the activity of the birds. I mean, we have the migrating Canada geese, and they signify autumn. Now, they've been flying in and out for a few weeks now. So to my mind, it feels like everything has shifted forward by about a month, if not more so. So to my mind, what we would expect in September has been happening in August. And of course, the nights have been cold. Well, not cold, but sometimes pretty chilly. And that's been evidenced by the fact that there have been so few insects this year. So few butterflies, moths, the bees.
It seems to have been more of that over the last few weeks. I have to say, watching, there seems to have been more insects. There's more spiders, certainly. A few butterflies around in the last few weeks. Can't say that I've noticed the nights being cooler. We're constantly told that the weather is getting warmer, and certainly from my perspective, certainly when I go to bed at night, it's very warm. Wake up in the morning, as if I've been on fire all night, really. And the last few nights we've begun to see much more autumnal stuff.
But the leaves have been changing earlier as well.
Yeah.
The colour. That's earlier this year. And definitely. I mean, nature's been telling us that we've been getting into autumn earlier this year, for sure. And that's actually been happening the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, what I was trying to get at there is whether this is the consequence of the activities of the moon and the sun, or whether it's the activities of man that have brought about this change. Because, I'm in agreement with you, there's certainly climate change, but there's some debate, just about how it's actually caused.
Well, the moon's doing what it always does, Tony, so there's not really a lot of change there. The sun, of course, is very active. It has been very active because it's at the height of its 22-year cycle. So it's after 11 years, it's at its peak. And as we know, it's been very active, hence the increase in the number of pretty spectacular aurora as well.
Yeah.
So the sun is highly active too. But yes, as to whether we're contributing to that, I personally think that we are. We mm-hmm. definitely. I mean, okay. we certainly, as I think I've said many times, yeah. We need to clean up our act quite a lot, don't we?
I think that's possibly the case, yeah. Getting away from the slightly more controversial stuff there, we've looked and decided this week is going to be very busy. The month in itself, as we head towards autumn, of course, brings forward some typical autumnal things in the sky. A constellation of Cassiopeia.
That's right, yes. Also, we're heading towards winter, of course. So that means that we are going to see new constellations now because Earth is in a different position in its orbit around the sun. That means we're seeing different parts of the sky, put simply. So we're heading back to where we are in winter. That means we can see the winter constellations, the winter groupings of stars. And it's a lovely time of year because obviously it gets dark earlier. We can go outside earlier. We get lovely dark skies. And the winter constellations are beautiful. Mm. So the Great Square of Pegasus, Cassiopeia, as you say, we'll be able to see the Great Andromeda Galaxy, the most distant thing that we can see with the naked eye. It looks like a speck, but through binoculars, yes, through binoculars or with a telescope, you're looking at a spiral galaxy that's got possibly a trillion suns in it, and it's 2.5 million light years away from us. So the light that is hitting the back of your eye left the galaxy 2.5 million years ago. Which is a pretty stunning fact, isn't it? And it's very spectacular.
That's speechless by that little one. A question before you go that I have to ask is, of course, because you've got the autumn equinox and that, and the sun beginning to drop down into the southern hemisphere with the longer nights and the shorter days, does it actually get darker at night? Because we started this conversation by talking about sitting in a field in Suffolk, looking up at the sky and it not being that dark. Would it be darker, say, in the middle of December than it would be, say, in the end of August?
Without a doubt, yes. Yes.
So I'd see
and
more.
The answer to that is, yeah, because in the summer, mm-hmm. the sun doesn't sink that far below the horizon before it starts rising again in the morning due to the tilt of Earth. So with that is why throughout summer, it's the skies are never really that dark. Never.
Okay.
But in the winter, once that sun has set and it sets further below the horizon, it's much, much darker. Yes,
I think I'm going to need to book that cottage in Suffolk again in December and get a flask of coffee, aren't I? Or soup to sort
you
of
are.
Keep you warm sitting outside and hope for a clear night.
You are.
That's just explained it perfectly for me, Jane. At that point, I'm going to say thank you for talking to us this morning. We are going to look up in the sky this week, certainly, and see some wonderful things and come back to you in a month's time to find out a little bit more about what is going to be in the sky as we head into those extra dark nights of winter. Jane Green for now, thank you.
That's a pleasure. Thank you, Tony.